Last week, two key events in the arena of civil rights took place within days of each other, though one received much more attention than the other. On Thursday, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder released a stinging report on the practices of the Ferguson, Missouri Police Department. 3 days before, a presidential task force submitted a report offering recommendations for building trust between communities and the police. Here in Michigan, a sustained effort to create that sense of trust has been quietly underway for years. A group known as LPACT is active in 5 Michigan cities. LPACT stands for Advocates and Leaders for Police and Community Trust. I spoke recently with Matt Wiesaw, the director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. I asked him about his initial feelings about the Ferguson report.
My reaction was shock in many of the cases. I reviewed that report, and one of my first thoughts was, it's hard to believe that this is happening in the United States to the extent that this report outlined it. The willful violation of, I think, 3 or 4 articles of the Constitution, just kind of, I thought, this can't be happening. And with my experience, I did a career in the state police. To see that this is how this particular agency was operating, I thought, how could this have gone unnoticed for all of these years?
What do we know about institutional bias or racism here in Michigan? Have we experienced the same kinds of attitudes by law enforcement in years past?
I think for the most part, Michigan is well ahead of the curve. About 18 years ago, in the city of Detroit, there was the issue of profiling that surfaced. Had the community in quite an uproar, the African-American community, the Arab-American community, had the feeling that they were being unfairly profiled by law enforcement. As a result of that, my predecessors and several of the community leaders, law enforcement, business leaders, political leaders got together and out of that developed a group called ALPAC, which is Advocates and Leaders for Police and Public Trust. Mm-hmm. And basically what that did was brought to the table leaders from all the various segments, law enforcement, again, political, community, faith-based, the different racial groups, to sit down and talk about issues, current issues, and issues that may surface, you know, based on what was happening in the world at that particular time. And what that did was developed relationships of trust. When emotional issues, tragedies would occur, the ALPAC folks would get together and discuss them. Law enforcement would share, okay, here's what we can share with you on what happened. Here's why it happened. You know, as more information becomes available, we will share with you what we can. And because of that trust relationship, it alleviated in most instances, I'll just call it rioting. You look at what happened in Ferguson when that tragic death occurred there, the town just went crazy, and you know how many millions of dollars of damage occurred just because people needed to act out because they had really no one to talk to, no one they could trust or believe in on what occurred. Michigan is ahead of the curve in that regard, in my opinion. We have 5 of these different organizations in some of the bigger cities. You've got Detroit, Grand Rapids, Benton Harbor, Flint, all working on those things, and Saginaw is another one.
And you would say they've had an impact.
They've definitely had an impact. You've had 2 incidents here fairly recent, the one in Dearborn where the African-American female was shot through the door and killed. You also had the incident in Saginaw where the homeless person was killed. Now, those were very high-charged incidents, but the groups got together. They talked them out. The key is, while they may not agreed, the conversation took place. The trust was there. They let the system, work. They may not have agreed with what the system came out with, but in this particular case, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District, Barb McQuaid, did just a tremendous job of staying ahead of the curve and sharing the process, how it worked out, who was talked to, why the decision was made the way it was made. And again, while people may not like the answer, they trusted the answer because it was a very transparent process.
And you would maintain that Michigan, or at least these 5 cities where the ALPACT program exists, that we are ahead of communities like Ferguson and others that are just more troubled along these lines, and that ALPACT has made the difference there?
Without question. Without question, I think you can credit ALPACT, and you can put any kind of name you want on it. The point is you have community leaders sitting down at the table and talking before things happen. Mm.
ALPACTs don't seem to be well publicized. Is that by design?
No, actually, it's not by design at all. One of the issues that we have is the fact that we don't publicize our success stories as well as we could. And part of that is due to manpower issues. But, you know, if you look at the Ferguson report, the Department of Justice report on Ferguson, the president's 21st Century Task Force report, the very first recommendation they have is creating community relationships, basically what we've already done here. Personally, based on my experience, I think because of the years that they have operated in the way that they operate, I think they're going to have a very, very uphill battle to reestablish that trust.
We're talking today about building trust among police departments and their local communities. Michigan has a formal program in five cities known as ALPACT. We're talking with Matt Wiesaw about it. Matt is the director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights and spent many years with the Michigan State Police. We'll get more into ALPACT in a minute, but before we go any further, I'd like to get your responses to a few particular items in the task force report. One is that independent prosecutors should be appointed to investigate deadly police shootings. The task force suggested that would help build trust. It's controversial. Is it a good idea?
I think it's a good idea. I think all prosecutors are independent anyway, but there's the appearance that they may not be independent by virtue of the fact that they work with those law enforcement agencies right. on a regular basis. But I think their job, just the nature of their job, requires them to look at the facts and only the facts. That is very difficult for community folks to understand and recognize because they're not involved in how that process works. Another good reason for all PACs. So to have an outside prosecutor, independent prosecutor come in and review that, I think makes all the sense in the world. I really don't think anyone would be offended by that. I think it just helps for the issue of transparency.
You have spoken about unconscious biases that exist that are pretty much unavoidable. Talk to us more about that and the role that those unconscious biases play in police enforcement.
I think for the most part, most of us, if not all of us, would say, you know, we're not bigoted, we're not racist, we don't discriminate. But yet there is this proven fact of we all have unconscious biases. You know, our first reaction in different situations are going to be a biased to an individual that we encounter. We have to recognize that, number one, we have that, how to work with that. And I think in today's age, I went into law enforcement in 1975, so 40 years ago this month. We did not talk about those things back in 1975. Nowadays, I think we are producing the most qualified recruit in law enforcement that we've ever trained in the past, and they get a lot of training in cultural competencies and biases and that kind of thing. The component that I think we're missing is you have very veteran officers out there that are now in a position of leadership who have never had this training. And we're training people now and they get out into the field. And some of the things that occur, and I've experienced it myself, is once you start acting the way you were trained, you pick up partners, veteran partners that say, no, that's not how we do things. This is how we do things out here. This is what has kept me safe. You know, every day has allowed me or she, I don't want to just talk about men, go home at night. And an example that happened to me was I did a traffic stop and we have a senior officer for the first 6-9 months of our training. And I did a textbook traffic stop. And as soon as the stop was done, my senior officer yelled at me and said, don't you ever do that again. Mm. And I said, well, that's how I was trained. He said, that's okay. That may have been how you were trained in the academy, but that's not how we do things out here.
How prevalent is that today, though, Matt?
Well, I really couldn't answer that because I've been retired for 14 years. I wouldn't say that it's real prevalent, but I'm not convinced that it doesn't happen anymore.
Okay. But do you think some of those veteran police officers would quarrel with the kinds of training that younger recruits are going through and saying it's simply not pragmatic, it's simply not realistic?
Yeah, I don't know that they would argue against that, but they're going to go with, in my opinion, they're going to go what has worked for them to keep them safe. Because at the end of the day, everybody wants to go home. Not only the police officer, but the person that they deal with. That is the goal. Everybody wants to go home. And change is very difficult, in my opinion, in the law enforcement community. Change comes very hard. I don't say that as a negative. I think that's kind of law enforcement mindset across the board for years. I think now some of your larger agencies are becoming more progressive. Very proud of what the state police does nowadays. The current leadership, Colonel Etchew, very committed to community involvement. That's critical, in my opinion, getting our officers involved in the community so that they understand what police do, why they do it, and the purpose behind it, I think is just critical.
The president's task force gave two overarching recommendations, but they are both really ambitious goals. The first one points to comprehensive criminal justice reform. The second points to community-based initiatives that address core issues of poverty, education, health, and safety. What about those overarching goals? What is it going to take to make those very ambitious goals work, do you think?
Well, aside from a lot of money, I'm not quite sure, because those really, in my opinion, aren't anything that we haven't heard before. We just had the 50th anniversary of Selma in the March on the Bridge, and you look at what happened 50 years ago and look at where we're at today. You know, we have come a long way, but many of those same issues are still here. There have been thousands of programs that have been put in place in that 50-year time period without, 100% success. I don't know that we'll ever have 100% success, but one of the things that I say on a regular basis, it's all about communication and getting people to understand why people do what they do, be it on the community side or the law enforcement side. People have to understand why you do your job the way you do it. You have to be open about it, transparent about it to the extent that you can. One of the pieces that the task force didn't touch on, in my opinion, is the role of the media. I think the media plays a very significant role in community relations by virtue of the type of information they put out, how they put it out, and are they waiting until they have, real facts, or are they just putting out the story as it's been relayed to them by someone? And I don't say that negatively. We all have a very important part in this entire process, and unless we're all playing, on the same field, it's going to make this a never-ending battle.
One final question regarding ALPACT here in Michigan. Are there plans to duplicate the ALPACT model in other cities besides the five where it currently is?
Yes, we make it very clear to local municipalities that we are a resource. If they are interested in developing an ALPACT, we are there to help them, to help them set it up, to give them the parameters in which they've been successful in the other communities. One of the nice things about the ALPACTs is all of them have co-chairs, one a law enforcement member and one a community member. So they are not controlled by any one segment. It's really a joint effort. I think I mentioned, and I don't want to identify the communities that we're working with, but we are working very closely with five additional communities, and I think by the end of the year we'll have five additional ALPACs that will be prepared to deal with these types of events should they occur in Michigan. But again, I think Michigan is well ahead of the curve.
Not prepared to identify which communities. So if I asked you if Lansing were one of them, you would be unable to answer that question?
Well, no, let me say this about Lansing. Lansing has a group like this, but it's not called an ALPAC. I'm going to get it wrong, but it's more along the lines of a humanities council. But Lansing has a very good system in place now where they meet regularly with their community folks. So it does not have to be called an ALPAC. It's called an ALPAC because that's something the department's engaged in. But Lansing has done, in my opinion, a very good job of keeping their lines of communication open with their citizens.
My guest has been Matt Wiesaw, a 26-year veteran of the Michigan State Police and currently the director of the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. We've been talking about ways to develop trust between police departments in Michigan and the communities they serve. A relevant and very compelling discussion. Great to have you, Mr. Wiesaw. Thanks for joining us.
No, thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity.